I'm John Kroll. Today, on this special recorded No Limits, we're going to be talking about Pack the Parks, an initiative by the city to draw people into the parks and emphasize the role that parks play in the life and livelihood of a community. My guests are Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson, and Keep Indianapolis Beautiful President Dave Forsell. Because this is a recorded program, we won't be taking calls, emails, or messages or comments via social media, but we do hope that you enjoy this broadcast. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today in this special recorded version of No Limits about Pack the Parks. It's an initiative that we're going to talk about in some depth and also about the way that the city's parks can be used. Because this is a recorded program, we won't be taking calls, emails, or messages or questions via social media, but we do hope you enjoy the conversation. My guests are Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson, and veteran of the program, Keep Indianapolis Beautiful President David Forsell. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. So I'll start, Linda, with you. Talk to me about what Pack the Parks is.
So Pack the Parks is, I think, the most exciting day in the parks year. It's where we open up so many of our facilities that typically may have a fee to come in. We open them up for free to the community. It's also a citywide celebration of what parks have to offer, and we offer extra programming all day long from dawn to dusk. We'll have at least 40 extra programs that Saturday. It's just it's a call out for folks to come out, experience parks, maybe get a little something back from us, and also a way to encourage folks to maybe visit a park they've never been to before, or sample a program they've never tried before. And so, of course, you know, we're hoping folks will fall in love with something new and come back again and again.
How many parks are there?
There are 210 parks.
210.
It's a number higher than most people realize.
Yes. And which of the ones are the most heavily trafficked?
Shoo, that's a good question. I think first you'd have to say the Monon, not technically a park, but the Monon is definitely the most used sort of public green space. After that, Eagle Creek, I'm sure, gets the most usage, one that I think a lot of people think is a state park, but it's a park that we're very proud to have in our system.
And David, why is a day like this, a moment like this, important to the city, and particularly in your organization's eyes, the work of keeping Indianapolis beautiful?
Right. Sure. Well, just to be outdoors has so many benefits. Starting, I think, with joy and respite. Right? There's such great pleasure peace and fun and relationship that come in outdoor and open and public spaces. City parks are a place for community. And I think these days it's so often easy for us to forget that we enjoy each other as a community and we need each other as a community, right? So open space is a great place to do that. I think the other bit that comes to mind for me is that green spaces are just good for people, particularly urban people. Even the research is really clear at this point. Even a single tree outside a front door, even an opportunity to spend a half hour in green space has remarkable effects on the mind and the body. So those are just a couple of reasons. My personal recommendation. Right?
Please. Yeah.
Gosh, I just have moved into a new neighborhood over the past year, and I love the Blickman Trail. It's just a lovely place along White River where you can enjoy the water and connect to the waterway and just have a beautiful, beautiful time. And you can get into Murat Park, and you can get into Holiday Park from that place. Mm. So it's just wonderful. And then I had a ball in Washington Park a couple weeks ago. And when I think about Washington Park, I don't necessarily think about nature. But it's incredible out there. Mm-hmm. Prairie and woods and everything else, and a little bit of frisbee golf. We snuck that in, too.
Washington Park is over 100 acres.
Yeah, it's
just off of 30th Street.
A wonderful resource. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that, I could go on and on, but I won't. I'll spare you that.
Well, no. Katie, why is this a priority from the city's perspective?
Well, I think we look at it from a quality of life standpoint. Obviously, having a strong park system is going to do what it needs to do to attract residents and attract business investment. It's going to encourage people to relocate here and be a part of our culture in Indianapolis.
So one of the things that we're talking about, too, and this is a trip down memory lane, is that's part of it this year is a way to sort of reenact the Hud Nut Hook. I won't ask which of you is the oldest.
I think it's pretty clear.
Because, he'll always be 10 years older than me.
Okay. So the reason I ask that is for those of us who are of a, I don't put it more politely, diplomatically, of a certain vintage rather than age, certain vintage, we remember the commercials where, you know, former and now late Indianapolis Mayor Bill Hudnut, who's a guest on this program, would do what he called the Hudnut Hook, and it was a way of, you know, throwing trash away and all of that. This year, Katie, you're encouraging people to do the their version of the Hudnut Hook, right?
Absolutely. So we're marking this 40-year anniversary of the Hudnut Hook. And it's, I think, an image that is very present in people's minds of Mayor Hudnut taking a step back and doing that hook shot. And I certainly encourage those that have not seen our very own Mayor Hogsett do his very best to imitate. He did a great job and certainly brings that same enthusiasm that we saw in Mayor Hudnut. But we are marking that 40th anniversary in a very similar fashion and reminding people, getting them civically engaged into picking up that piece of litter and making sure it's in its place in a trash can, but also thinking a little bit more holistically in It's My City is a 3-year campaign. So this year we are focusing on cleaning up Indianapolis. Next year we're going to take the green approach. And then in 2019 we're going to take that beautiful approach. And each sort of has its own different aspect to the program, but this year is pretty exciting. And I think we're partnering with not only Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, not only with our partners at Parks, but reaching out to businesses, schools, individuals to get everybody engaged.
So where did the idea of having the sequencing and these themes for each year, where did that come from, Katie?
That's a great question. I think when we sat around a table, we started to think about what made sense, what was the right approach to get people civically engaged, and what opportunities presented themselves, and thinking about what each of our organizations worked on. And it was very organic in the way that it came up, and looking at that sort of the litter pickup, greening Indianapolis, and then taking sort of potentially a cultural arts lens to that third year.
And, you know, is this a way, Linda, to really kind of fully integrate the way that people see and use the parks? Because, you know, most people assume that parks are just part of the landscape at some level. They don't really see them as a vibrant and multifaceted part of the community.
Right, absolutely. I think, you know, that's something I think I've learned in this position, that people like Katie, David, and I take for granted that we all sort of know and appreciate all the benefits that parks and clean spaces and green spaces bring to our community. But I think we've got some education, you know, we're working on educating people on, you know, the way they affect property values, the way they affect your quality of life, and all the things Dave said to start, you know, all the benefits of trees that KIB has long touted. I think we're getting more sophisticated in how we talk about the benefits to neighborhoods. It's not just a place to play. Play is really, really important, mm-hmm. and beauty is really, really important. But there's lots of other stuff that comes with it as well. You know, we're all about, you know, social engagement and environmental health and our citizens' health and wellness and that sort of thing. So we provide those opportunities for folks. They may not even be thinking about it when they're doing it, right? Mm-hmm. They're just going for a walk in the park. But to us, they're being healthier. They're engaging, you know, in their neighborhood. There's all sorts of stuff that comes from that.
What are the parts of the park system that now are the most underutilized or underappreciated?
That's a good question. I think we probably don't have as many swimmers and as many large team sports folks as we probably did in ages past. We're seeing a real rise in more solo activities, which probably isn't a surprise to anyone. More running, more mountain biking, more, you know, that sort of thing.
And the whole bowling alone.
Yes,
phenomenon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we're seeing more adventure sports. People want to, you know, they want to do triathlons and they want to jump ramps on with bikes. And, you know, there's that sort of stuff that's really growing. And then we're really growing in the non-traditional sports as well in this community, right? You look at lacrosse and more international sports coming to our city are really sort of taking off, you know, in a different way. You know, if mothers are maybe afraid to put their kids into football now, you know, so some of those sports are maybe not growing in the same way. They're still really popular, but the growth seems to be going other directions.
And how do you track growth in the way that the parks are used? I mean, I know at some parks, like at Eagle Creek, which is a park I've used an awful lot over the years, you sort of have to wave at a, you know, someone at the
station. Hopefully you're paying when you can.
Well, pay unless you've gotten the annual membership and all of that. But even then, I can say, okay, there's a way because I have to go by the stand. That someone can make a mark and say so-and-so came through. But there are a lot of parks here where you can just walk in and you know, often not even see another human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We estimate that we serve over 8 million visitors a year, but I'll be the first to admit that, of course, it's not the most scientific way of counting folks. We do, spot checks, and then you sort of extrapolate from there what the numbers probably are. And then with programming and leagues and classes, you know, people are registering, so we can track that more specifically. But in terms of overall service numbers, it's, you know, you sort of guesstimate based on sort of averages.
David, in terms of, you've already mentioned a couple of parks that you really enjoy, and you talk about the impact the studies have shown about even just seeing a tree or something like that. Could you talk a little bit about how having a vibrant and vital park system contributes to the cultural life of a community?
Yeah. I mean, I think people want to be in livable places, and livability is a pretty wide topic, but certainly people want to be in beautiful places, places that have a variety of options at a variety of prices. You know, Linda and the mayor have done a great job of providing any variety of programs that are available as well. But more important, I think people want a pleasant life, and parks have so much to do with that at very little or no cost. Whether that's keeping people in this community or whether it's attracting new, the park system is a really, really crucial part. With my KIB hat on specifically, we also are very involved, and the city is supportive of our pocket park work, where people...
Quickly, what is a pocket park?
A pocket park may be as small as a single vacant lot where people can, if they don't have great access to a city park, they often will come to us and say, we'd love to have our own community park. Social bonding is the primary outcome, and we have the data to show that, some research that Butler did. I think the other bit is that in addition to the cultural life and just sort of an overall livability bit, green space, whether it's a city park or in a smaller place, just provides tremendous value for people to be able to connect to each other. I think that's another way that the park system helps Indianapolis succeed and be the place we want to live in.
Do we have enough parks here? I mean, how do we compare with
I think
with
that depends on who you ask.
and that may be, it sounds like that may be a question we have to defer for the next segment. But a quick yes or no answer. Do we have enough?
I guess from my perspective, there can't be enough parks.
Okay, so answer is no?
The flip side to that is you can never have too much, right? So Yes, we could always use more, especially in certain townships.
Okay. And Katie?
I have to agree with everything that's been said. We could absolutely use more green space.
Okay. So what we have here is a consensus that we probably need more parks, but in certain areas. So that is what we will talk about when we come back from the break. If you're just joining us, this is a recorded version of No Limits. We are talking about Pack the Parks, a July 8th initiative that is designed to open up the parks to people in this city. My guests are David Forsell of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, and City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson. Because this is a recorded program, we're not taking calls, emails, or messages via social media, but we hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. And I should wish all of our listeners and everyone here a happy 4th of July. Hope everyone is enjoying Independence Day. We are talking today in this special recorded version of No Limits about Pack the Parks. It's an initiative that is designed to fill the parks for specific purposes to get people to appreciate the beauty of the Indianapolis park system. Because it is a recorded program, we're not taking calls, emails, or messages or questions via social media, but we do hope you're enjoying the discussion. My guests are Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson, and Keep Indianapolis Beautiful President Dave Forsell. Before we went to the break, I asked whether there were enough parks. Everybody said, no, not enough. We've got 210, but and they're all kind of giggling right now because they're wondering how people are going to react, I presume, back in the office when they hear this. But, Linda, you said something I thought was intriguing. You said, particularly in some parts of the city,
There
aren't enough. What are the parts of the city that don't have enough parks, or is it not that they don't have enough parks, but they don't have enough of the right kinds of parks?
A little of both.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, our goal is to not only have enough, but to have the right facilities and the right activities in the right places, right? So Center Township may have a demand for more after-school programming, and Franklin Township may have a demand for more baseball fields or whatever it is. So that's certainly something we put a lot of thought into. But certainly, as we've developed as a city, and as we became a city-county government, we have certain, you know, townships that just don't have as much parkland per person or per acre as others. So our southern townships have fewer, a little less parkland. So it's just it's a function of how we've developed as a city.
And this is a kind of a strange question, but the show is called No Limits for a reason. You know, how does a place become designated as a park here in the city? It sounds like, you know, David's making an argument that pocket parks, so that there could be new ones developed along the way. How do you go about creating a park in Indianapolis?
Sure. It happens a variety of ways. And, of course, so many of our parks have been with us for literally a century, right, in a lot of cases. You know, it takes a sizable piece of land that's available and that someone wants to preserve. And then, you know, there's a process certainly with the Parks Board. And, you know, there are governmental processes to go through in terms of land acquisition and that sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much that simple. There are resources involved, obviously. Mm-hmm. And ideally, if someone wants to create a new park, they may also bring some resources to do that with them to help supplement that creation. But
how long have we been at 210?
A few years, probably.
A few years,
yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
But it has grown over time.
Absolutely, absolutely. As we've tried to fill the gap in, you know, we just added two new parks in Franklin Township, for instance, in the last year or two. Two incredible parks, actually, Wolf Run and Wildwood. So, you know, those numbers creep up every once in a while.
Katie, in terms of because you also indicated we don't have enough parks, and terms of the issue of sustainability, you know, what are the sorts of parks that we ought to be looking at developing? Are there some parks that maybe we ought to repurpose?
I think any time that we can take a step back and look at the assets that we currently have in an inventory and making sure that that we are being thoughtful about those investments and that we take care of the parks that we currently have in our system. And I think from a sustainability standpoint, something that we always are discussing is equitable access to those parks, making sure that there's bike infrastructure available at the park systems, bike lanes to those parks. You know, where do they sit among the transit lines that Indigo supports? Just sort of taking a step back constantly and evaluating what that looks like holistically from a sustainability standpoint.
So, David, in terms of Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, because you said we should have more, we always need more, where are the places that you would like to see, and would you like to see different kinds of parks? I mean, you've already mentioned the pocket parks. You know, from your organization's perspective, what are the kinds of parks or park opportunities to create parks that we ought to be looking at right now?
Oh, that's interesting. That's a great question. So one of the things, your notion about repurposing, I think, is interesting because maybe you guys would agree with this. I think you might, that parks are not static places.
Absolutely true.
And so, for instance, KIB's been very involved in any number of city parks and greenways. We've taken a really active role in doing what we can to restore native habitat along corridors. So along Fall Creek, all the way from 38th Street down past Ivy Tech, we've taken out all of the invasive plants that do no good for the critters and keep neighbors from being able to actually access or even see the water. We've taken those out, and we've created visual access as well as assets for honeybees and butterflies and birds and all these sorts of things. So the notion of repurposing for the well-being of the natural world is something that routinely is happening on city parkland. We're really proud to be a part of that. The data is so clear. There is an incredible researcher. Her name is Ming Kuo. She's at the University of Illinois. There's actually the Center for the Landscape for Human Health. Center for Human Health and Landscapes. And she is now working and believes there's really a connection between green space in cities and urban dwellers' immune systems. She points probably to 30 different pieces of research that suggest that generally green space makes us more well. Whether that's cortisol in our veins or whether it's depression or anxiety that we suffer from, there's amazing research that shows people within a certain proximity of green space generally have less anxiety and depression. So what kind of park should we have? We should have parks, I think, for people. And those parks ought to incorporate the natural world where there's also a lot of difficulty. Cities can play a really important role in terms of species collapse, saving honeybees, saving the monarch and the like. So parks support life, truly. They're that important in cities.
Well, and I guess that's where I want to take the conversation next, is to talk about really the evolving nature or definition of parks. Again, going back to that, being a person of somewhat mature vintage here, you know, when I was a kid, we considered anything that that had a playground and a swing set, you know, of some kind, that was a park. It could be entirely concrete and no living thing anywhere near other than the kids who were crawling all over it. But we would call that a park. Has the definition, our expectation of what a park is, changed over time? And Lynn, I'm going to start with you on that. Has that changed the role that the Parks and Recreation Department has to play in the community and meeting the needs of that community?
Oh, absolutely. Again, I go back to saying it's not just about play, right? Play, play is always really important, but there's so much more than play that's happening in parks now. I mean, we're social services organizations, we're social justice organizations, we're youth, a key youth employer, you know, all of those things. Indy Parks will serve 400,000 meals to hungry kids this year, including as part of our summer servings program, where we have kids at, you know, dozens and dozens of parks and lots of other partner sites who come and eat lunch with us every single day. In a lot of cities, where we haven't quite done this yet here, but in a lot of cities, parks departments partner with healthcare organizations, or, you know, are sharing space with other social services organizations, that sort of thing. We employ hundreds of kids a year, which we know is something important to Mayor Hogsett and his Project mm-hmm. Indy initiative. So we're a key employer for youth, to, you know, so that they, A, earn money in the summer, of course, but also, B, are doing something productive and service-oriented for their community as lifeguards or camp counselors or, you know, and the like. Yeah, I think people have come to expect a lot more from us.
Yeah, as someone who put himself through a good portion of college, a little bit of high school, and grad school wearing the whistle as a lifeguard. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm aware of that. You say they work as lifeguards, counselors. What other kinds of work?
So those are the main roles that we offer directly. We then partner with a lot of organizations. So we currently probably actually, you know, every day this week we've got folks from TeenWorks out working in parks with us. They're a great nonprofit that also hires youth. So they're out cleaning up parks and fixing up parks in neighborhoods, maybe parks that we, you know, don't always have the chance to give as much attention as they deserve. So those kids are out there working.
There had been stories, obviously, that it was getting harder to find lifeguards and people to work at that because of the balanced school calendar. Mm-hmm. You no longer have that 3-month
absolutely
chunk of time that, you know, young people mm-hmm. are going to be available to work. Is that the case? Is it harder to find them?
It is a challenge. Yes, it is a challenge. Our staff did an amazing job again this year, sort of turning over every rock, you know, in terms of, you know, coming up with every idea. And we successfully hired what we needed, you know, everybody that we needed to hire to keep pools open and to do what we needed to do. But yeah, it's a challenging exercise for sure. And it's, you know, and another challenge we have as a park system is that, you know, we have a lot of kids who don't know how to swim mm-hmm. in the city. So we're constantly, you know, trying to offer new swim lesson programs and, you know, water safety programs as well to sort of, A, for just the safety of our youth, but then also to build up our potential workforce later on.
If you're just joining us, we are talking really about the role parks play in a community. The hook for it is the upcoming Pack the Parks Day on July 8th on Saturday. This is a recorded version of No Limits, which means we aren't taking calls or emails or messages or questions via social media, but we hope you're enjoying the conversation. David, I'm going to ask you the same question. How has the definition or our expectation of what a park should be changed over time?
I'm not a parks professional like Linda. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess I would say it goes back to some of the notions I was mentioning earlier. My experience is about the pocket parks mm-hmm. and where I have a really close understanding of those things. So green space is becoming not just sort of a passive sort of place, but green space often is seen by the community with very specific intent. So at some of our pocket parks, they want to celebrate their culture. And so we'll create a park with a casita and a 1964 Bonneville sticking up in it, all right, mm-hmm. to talk about Latin culture. Sometimes it is about healing communities. So vacant lots are taken and created to remember a little girl who was killed or a family that's going through a particular hardship. So the landscapes are really a platform for people's ambitions and desires, and they are across the board. So we've done like 80 pocket parks over the years, and everyone is different. It sure would be nice to just cookie cutter and drop down from above and say, well, this is what you'll get. We really see parks as a culture and identity as well. I'd say that's been most enlightening and surprising for me over the years with our pocket park work. I used to think, you know, pretty was good enough. But in fact, these little places become expressions of community.
Katie, I'm really interested in your answer to this because two generations ago, I preface the question another way. Sustainability now is pretty much at the center of many
all
of our
conversations.
All of our conversations as a community, as a culture, all of that. Two generations ago, though, it would have been on the outskirts mm-hmm. of those conversations at best. And you've already articulated a case here that that the parks are sort of central to any sort of vision of communicating mm-hmm. sustainability and developing a plan for sustainability. So in your mind, how is the definition or the expectation of what a park is, what it should be, changed over, say, the past half century?
So I would look at it as a green space, and that was one of, I think, the inspirations behind looking at It's My City in 2018 as the year of green. We're hoping to make green spaces more accessible and more abundant. And that's going to take engagement from businesses and community partners and residents to expand and invest in those green spaces across the city. One of the things that we have access to in the Office of Sustainability is a Indy Urban Garden Program. Mm-hmm. And very similar to a pocket park, it's taking vacant land available through, in our case, it's available land that's provided through either something that's already on the books with the city and making it into something that can be farmed and work for the community, the surrounding community around it. So providing access to food that that community may or may not already have access to. And so I like to take a step back and acknowledge that green space is those parks. It's the pocket parks. It's trails and greenways. It's these urban gardens. It's expansive. And there really is no limit.
Hey, wait a minute. Did she just do that?
Yeah, I thought she would say, like that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the plug, Katie. But,
I'm here all day.
we appreciate that. So, you know, we probably ought to talk. I'm going to talk at greater length in the last segment about Pack the Parks and what you hope to achieve with it, what the goals are. But I'd like to start just by talking about, is there a place that that people can go to get a sense of what the activities are going to be? You know, you got 210 options, it sounds like, and probably multiple options within each of those parks. There's got to be some sort of clearinghouse, I would guess, that can tell you what you could do and where you could do it, right?
Absolutely. So the Indy Parks website is indyparks.org. We are also very active on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll be posting updates. And there's a Pack the Parks event on Facebook as well where folks can find some more details, and we'll be posting schedules for the day and all of that as we get closer.
Okay. And those schedules will be updated, and you can – are they going to be lined up so that geographically, for example, if I live in downtown Indianapolis, will I be able to figure out someplace that's close to me if I live in Washington Township?
Yes, activities will be listed by time and by park, so folks should be able to very easily find what they need.
And I would want to mention also the service opportunity around Pack the Parks. I mean, certainly when you are when you have the chance to be there, shoot your own Head Nut Hook video. There are going to be a variety of trash cans around, and then driving traffic also to the It's My City Indy.org website.
So your own Head Nut Hook video, are you collecting the video from
yes,
people? You want
absolutely.
People to send it, so you
great.
Want them to do selfies or have somebody
absolutely.
Shoot it
it's
for
a
them?
Great social opportunity. Shoot your own Head Nut Hook video. Let's see what you got.
Where is it all going to be posted?
That is a great question. We are going to put it on our social channels and include it on the It's My City website.
Does anybody get? Is there anyone going to be getting a prize or an honor for being an honorary mayor, Bill? Or
well, we might just have to look into that.
Okay, well, we are talking about Pack the Parks. That's an initiative of Indianapolis Parks and several partner organizations, including the Sustainability Department and Keep Indianapolis Beautiful today on No Limits. Because this is a recorded program, we're not taking calls, emails, or messages or questions via social media. But we're having a fun conversation. We hope you're enjoying it, too. My guests are Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson, and Keep Indianapolis Beautiful President David Forsell. Once again, I am John Crawl. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today in this special recorded version of No Limits about Pack the Parks and really the role of that's an initiative for this coming Saturday when we're going to fill the city's parks, we hope. But more generally about the role of parks and that they play in the life of a community and the development of culture and how the city is using its park system. Because this is a recorded conversation, we're not going to be taking calls or emails or messages or questions via social media, but we hope you're enjoying the conversation. We're talking with Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson, and Keep Indianapolis Beautiful President Dave Forsell. So let's talk a little bit now. We've talked to sort of the evolution of parks and how our expectations of them have changed over time. Let's talk really about what the city wants to get out of this Pack the Parks investment, because throwing open the doors is not cost-free, and asking people to commit time is not cost-free. So I'll start first with you, Linda.
Sure. So last year at our inaugural Pack the Parks Day, we had over 16,000 visitors, and I'd like to throw down the challenge to my staff that maybe we get to at least 20,000 visitors this year, just as a rough start. But Pack the Parks is so much more. It's our chance to, you know, give back to our community. It's a chance to educate people about what parks have to offer. It's a chance to connect people to our partners, our other initiatives that are happening. So, you know, as Katie's talked about, the It's My City initiative. During the Pack the Parks Day, people will be able to take their, you know, Hogsett Hook selfie at six parks, or five parks, including Broad Ripple, Douglas, Riverside, Garfield, and Somm. So that'll be an integral part of the day, you know, just a fun thing that's happening out there out of, you know, dozens and dozens of other activities.
Probably ought to identify where in the city those parks are, because I'm always reminded, I grew up here, around this, so I know the area, but I'm reminded there are a lot of people who have arrived in Indianapolis and don't have the geography of the place tattooed in their brains the way I do. So can we talk a little bit about where?
Sure. So if folks want to get famous using the It's My City hashtag and, you know, doing their own Hogsett Hook, they can go to Broad Ripple Park, which hopefully self-explanatory, in Broad Ripple. Riverside Park on the near west side, just off of 30th and Harding. Garfield Park near south side. I think Garfield's some park that lots of people are discovering anew. It's closer to downtown than I think people used to think. Somm Park on the far north side, just on the edge of the county. And then Douglas Park, which is on the sort of near northeast side, 30th and Keystone-ish.
And again, that's where they can go to do the HUDNUT/Hogsett Hook.
Hashtag It's My City.
Hashtag It's My City. Do you have a goal for how many videos you want to collect? Or
Let's see. Linda has thrown down 20,000. I mean, a couple thousand would be kind of fun.
That'd be incredible.
It would be amazing.
If you could get to it.
Let's do it.
So is there that much trash actually in the parks that people can do this?
Or? John, that's a whole other conversation.
Please recycle.
that brings up a good point, though. I mean, through It's My City and Pack the Park, you know, I know these things, you know, they all have. But at the heart of it, you know, what we all want, all three of us, is for folks to connect to these spaces. Mm-hmm. And we all admit we can't do it alone, right? As the city of Indianapolis, as residents, whatever, we can't do it alone. So we need citizen engagement. We need folks to come out and help pick up litter. We need folks to get their corporations out to work with KIB or to adopt a park through our My City, My Park program. We need, you know, we need neighborhoods to feel ownership over the green spaces in their area. I mean, all of these things ideally lead to a whole bunch of really fun stuff and a whole bunch of really great exposure and energy. But at the end of the day, we hope that they lead to deeper and greater engagement.
And that's a theme out of this conversation that there's been, is that at least we've talked about the tangible goals here, that Linda would like to see 20,000 people show up. Katie would like 2,000 videos. Dave, I don't know if you've thrown a number out, but you can throw a number out.
Lay down.
We would love to have people like immediately go. We have a website. It's mycityindy.org, where the city and KIB and a variety of companies are all interested in having people get on there, registered just to be made aware of what they can do to help. And then there's all sorts of different ways to plug in, whether you want to do a cleanup, whether you want to plant trees, call the Arts Council to maybe paint a utility box. There are all these different things. And this whole theme of It's My City, I'm reminded, you know, Bill Hudnut got famous. I mean, he was famous, but maybe I should say infamous around this Hudnut Hook campaign. And it really wasn't about Bill Hudnut. If you'll recall, he was encouraging everybody to do something. And the notion that all of us can do a little and change a lot is this theme that runs through It's My City. So I would say we would love to see hundreds of people get on that website and become involved in some fashion or another. And we have the means to be able to track all that.
So in terms of that, It's My City is really supposed to be the primary beneficiary of Pack the Parks at some level. You're trying to create a sense of civic engagement here and to have people take some sort of ownership of the community in which they live. How are you going to track that? I mean, what are the ways that that you will see that manifested? I left off with Dave, so I'll start with him first.
Yeah, well, so the website that the City of Indianapolis and KIB and Lilly and others have developed, we'll have the ability to understand who's getting involved and who's getting engaged as an individual through that website in picking up litter around their block or becoming an adopt-a-block coordinator, registering to plant trees, volunteering for an organization. So we'll be able to track and manage that data and have a sense of engagement from that standpoint. The other thing is that we're also looking toward the annual Indy Do Day, which is coming up in late September, where Lilly has a tremendous footprint on this city, and KIB works really closely with Lilly. But we're hoping that there will be tens, twenties of companies that get all of their employees out and do something to create positive change on that day and on that weekend as well. So we'll be absolutely able to understand the business engagement side. But the cool thing, and Linda Broadfoot, back in the day when we were working together at KIB, she got me on this whole social media thing. So the hashtag It's My City, it's important because we're also able to track how many people are doing something for the betterment of our city if they simply use their smartphone to snap a picture and say, hashtag It's My City. We'll be able to follow and understand engagement that way, too.
Katie, what are you going to see as the manifestations of the fact that this is working and that people are taking more ownership for the community in which they live?
Sure. Oftentimes, what we see, the way that we're able to track improvement in our community is through the Mayor's Action Center. That's a whole host of data that gives us the temperature of our community. And what we anticipate is right now, on an average day, the number one call into the Mayor's Action Center is often trash-related. And we would anticipate that over time, over this 3-year campaign, we anticipate seeing a reduction of such calls with a collaborative, civically engaged approach to dealing with these issues.
Linda, same question to you. How do you, we've talked about the numbers. You want to see 20,000 people there. But what's going to be the sense for you that this has had an impact other than people came and had a nice day and then went home?
You know, at a high level, it probably is sort of its engagement and its investment, frankly. So through our My City, My Park initiative, which is sort of our, way that folks are contributing to It's My City and Parks, where corporations adopt a park or come out and do a service project, we've seen about 3,000 volunteers in the last 18 months. And that's a huge increase from, over the last several years. We were really growing in that area. So I think as we see more folks coming to us, I think that will be a sign. As more folks want to volunteer, as more folks want to bring their companies out, as more folks are contributing to the Indianapolis Parks Foundation, our great partners there, and getting more involved, that I think that's going to naturally flow from all of this activity.
If you're just joining us, we're doing a special recorded No Limits today. Because it is a recorded program, we're not taking calls, emails, or messages or questions via social media, but we're talking about the role of parks and the development, really, of a sustainable city. here on No Limits. My guests are Indy Parks and Recreation Director Linda Broadfoot, City of Indianapolis Director of Sustainability Katie Robinson, and Keep Indianapolis Beautiful President Dave Forsell. So, Katie, I'm going to ask you this. Let's suppose this does take root and it's successful and you see people, you know, responding to the It's My City initiative or My City, My Parks. And, you know, this becomes a movement. In what ways do you see it transforming the life of this community?
Well, we certainly hope this lives beyond 3 years. We're giving people, we've sort of talked about this, that we're providing education and access to resources and providing them with the tools to identify those actionable steps. And certainly they're not something that end on December 31st, 2019. We hope this takes root and people are taking a sustainable approach to their civic pride and wanting to be more engaged beyond this 3-year campaign in new ways.
David, same question to you. I mean, how do you see, you know, we're talking about a change really of a cultural mindset here, that it is not, a city is no longer a place just where you live, but it is a place where you accept a responsibility to maintaining. How would that change of mindset manifest itself? How would it change this place in which we live?
I think one of the things that is at top of mind for us is litter and sort of the rather oblivious and callous way that a few people cause a lot of trouble in terms of litter, mm-hmm. and litter begets litter and the like. So one of the things that I would love to see over time is that we could put ourselves out of the neighborhood cleanup business. We may never get there, but civic engagement is the way to do it. And so, you know, we've seen almost a 50% growth in the number of people who are adopting their blocks over the past year. It is a small, inexpensive way to increase quality of life at the very block level. Imagine if this 3-year campaign could motivate 3 or 4 or 5 times as many, that would be catalytic. And we haven't even talked about economics and costs of what the city faces and Parks Department faces. But the more engagement and ownership that we have as citizens and the less burden we can take off of stretched government resources, I think the better off we'll all be. We'll all get to know each other as neighbors. We'll have strengthened bonds in our communities. We'll feel a sense of ownership and maybe to provide just a little bit of relief to an overburdened city government. But I would love it if we saw from this a transformed ethic in terms of service and care for the city.
Linda, how would, if this takes root, how do you see it changing? And I'll make it more specific to you, changing the way people view parks, too.
Well, first, ditto.
Yeah.
Amen.
Wrong show, but that's
it. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, definitely wrong show.
Sorry. Probably a little bit of the same thing, but in more targeted areas, right? So, I mean, we deal with an incredible litter problem in parks, unfortunately, which, you know, again, just adds to, you know, the economic challenges and social challenges that we have in those spaces. So would love to see a downtick in that for sure. And just people feeling a sense of ownership. I think, again, you know, there's a park in your neighborhood, most likely. Maybe you've not even explored it. You know, explore it, feel a sense of ownership over it, help care for it, even informally. Because we need everybody engaged to help make our city better.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end of the program here. And I want to talk specifically about this Saturday's event, Pack the Parks and all of that. Again, we've talked about the fact that there are 210 different parks here. So there are a lot of places to go. There are 5 different options for doing the Hudnut / Hogsett Hook that that sort of span the city. I mean, there's a place that no matter where you live or work in the city, there's going to be one that's fairly close to you. What are some of the undersung or underappreciated opportunities. What would you recommend to people that something that wouldn't be obvious, some way that they could go enjoy a park that they haven't seen or experienced before? Ooh. Linda, I'll start with
that
you.
That list is long. Again, I go back to, my mantra is go to a park you've never seen. You know, out of 210, there's a lot of beauty out there and a lot of cool stuff happening that folks have no idea. You know, if it's not their neighborhood park or if it's not some of the bigger parks that people are more familiar with, like a Holiday or Eagle Creek or Garfield, you know, there's a lot of great stuff happening. You know, on that day, on July 8th, you know, we're going to have everything from Pete the Planner is going to be out at a couple different parks doing a financial literacy class, which I'm so excited about. Pete's so cool. So he's doing two different ones of those for us. Of course, we'll be serving our summer servings meals out at a variety of parks. We'll have radio stations out doing giveaways, I believe, at West Montgomery and some other places. We'll have yoga in the gardens at Garfield. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. There's going to be so much variety from dawn to dusk. Concerts at King Park in the afternoon, just north of downtown. There's a lot to do that day.
What's a park, and I'll ask any of the three of you, that really doesn't get the appreciation, doesn't get the use that it deserves? It's just one of those unsung gems. That's what I'm trying to drive people to right now. Katie.
Okay, well, for me, I have to take this on a personal level only because it's a park that I've not been to. And since I've been back at the city, I need to get there, and it's Holiday Park. I have never been, and I want to go. And it just – everything that Linda has done, and she's done a great job promoting it, it's an essential must visit.
Absolutely.
David, how about for you?
I would double down on that one. I think that the work that the park staff has done there. It's a gorgeous park. There's history there. There's beauty there. A lot of private fundraising that has led to a beautiful centerpiece there. You know, I'm gonna throw a wild card out here. I moved to a neighborhood because of a city park, and it's McCord Park. McCord Park is a little teeny postage stamp park, but it has a remarkable piece of art dedicated to an African-American officer, the first one to die in the line of duty in Indianapolis. And it's a great experience to experience that beautiful little park.
That's going to have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Linda Broadfoot, Katie Robinson, and Dave Forsell for what's been a fun conversation about the parks, and we'll explain the whole Ditto reference when we get off the air, too. Linda, also like to wish all of our listeners a very happy 4th of July. Hope you are enjoying America's birthday. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.